Hello, hello, it's Brooke Devard. You're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. My guest is a very old, dear friend of mine, Amelia. We were college roommates together, which makes me kind of feel bad for you because I know I was not the cleanest roommate, but we got through it. And now we're just in LA in my hotel room, just cleansed our faces in pajamas, and I'm really excited to have you on.
I'm really excited to be here, Brooke. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. How long have we known each other?
I mean, gosh, it's been a while now, 10 years.
Almost 10 years.
Does that date us?
Yeah, well, it's fine. Everyone knows how old I am. I'm 27 and proud. We met freshman year. When I think about the way that we were partying at Stanford, like right now, for example, it's what time? Like 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
We're in our pajamas, like very happy to do so.
So content.
And when we met freshman year, we were like doing double shots of Bacardi 151 rum.
Exactly.
It actually makes me sick to think about.
Alcohol that came out of a plastic bottle.
So horrible.
Disgusting.
So horrible. And I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, like, are we too young to feel like we can't party anymore?
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm going to let that pressure me into doing something that's going to make me feel really shitty and totally hijack my weekend.
Yeah. We really pushed it. We really pushed it in college.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Sometimes Monday.
Oh my gosh. Now that you say that, I realize that we went out during the week.
Of course.
Of course.
I don't understand what I was doing sleep-wise, how I functioned.
I don't know how we did
and,
it.
Like, why I didn't die.
And Stanford was really hard. I mean, some people, like you, for example, you didn't have to study as much as I did. I had to study a lot to keep up with the amount of work. You were like, what was your major again?
Well, I started out doing electrical engineering and moved to management science.
Oh my God. Management science and engineering, though, just for people listening, is one of the hardest majors at Stanford. And engineering, like, I had to take an engineering class to graduate, and it was like the bare minimum basic class. And I was like, I am so in over my head. Like, I don't know how you did it. You're so smart, though.
I don't know how I survived it, to be honest.
You, one of the things that I feel like really defines you is that you are Greek. You are
yes.
a proud Greek woman.
Yes.
And I even remember, like, I think it was freshman year, we were talking about, like, white girls, and you were like, I feel like I'm not white, I'm Greek. And I was like,
yeah.
It's like a different, because you're so connected to your culture, you feel like, I don't know, you explain it.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't identify as white, because for me, that's its own cultural entity in and of itself, and it's something where I was always not like othered. I don't need to be that dramatic, but people are like, you eat lamb. I'm like, yeah, I had lamb chops for dinner last night. They're like, what? Like, if you've seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding, you can relate to the girls.
Yes.
They have the Wonder Bread sandwiches, and then you have like leftovers. That was me.
That's so
I was
funny.
The girl with the moussaka, like as leftovers.
Yeah.
And people just didn't quite get it. So I didn't feel like I was part of that group. Obviously, like if you were to look at me, you would categorize me. But for me, I feel like I love my culture, and so I'm always trying to get to the bottom of other people's culture, so I feel like it's not a good identifier. And I also feel like my family came over here, my grandparents came over here. So
from Greece.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the history in America, if you identify in that way, I feel like most immigrants would identify by their culture and their ethnicity, not by being white or their skin tone.
Yes. And I've heard that from like Italian Americans.
Yep.
We'll be like, I don't identify as white. I'm Italian American.
Right.
But, yeah.
I just felt I belong somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic. I'm like, I'm more American than Greek people.
Right.
But I'm more Greek than American people.
Right.
Like, where
do
I belong?
You went to high school in Sacramento in a very diverse high school, though, right?
Like, yeah. There was no racial majority in my high school.
Really?
Cool.
I can't imagine what that was like. So it was like Latino, Black,
all of the above,
Asian, everything.
Yep, all of the above.
And were people in different cliques depending on like ethnicity, or was it all just kind of like mixed? Like, how did you fit into the high school scene?
Oh, I was very much in the AP classes group.
Okay,
I don't know.
So you were like the smart nerds.
So that becomes less diverse, I would say.
Oh, that's
once
sad.
You get to that,
that's
if
sad.
You're in all
yeah.
honors classes, it's just the unfortunate reality. Like, it was eye-opening to be in some of the general courses because there were people who couldn't read.
Wow.
And
in high school, but they couldn't
read? In high school. And you would see it because it would manifest in them kind of messing around in class or not being there, showing up late, but then they would come in and they'd be asked to read something and they would just struggle through it at best.
That's really sad.
And it was really eye-opening because I went to Catholic school for elementary school. The how people can just be passed through the school system without mm-hmm. ever actually having to learn.
I know.
But it was cool going to, I just feel like I learned a lot about other people. I actually started a culture club when I was in high school.
Oh my God,
I'm such a nerd.
So adorable.
I just like learning about activities that center around different, you know, cultural activities. I want to know, I'm excited about mine. I want to hear about yours.
Yes.
And it's, I think, something that should be celebrated.
Totally. Totally. And I know that you were very close with like your Greek community.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I even remember even at Stanford, you would like go back for the weekend
yeah.
and go to like Greek dances.
Yeah.
And it was like, there was like
it's
drama
so
in the
fun.
Greek community.
Oh God.
Tell me a little bit about like Greek beauty standards and if they're different and how beauty is kind of, because you've obviously experienced American culture, but you've also,
certainly.
You know, Greek culture. Are there differences in terms of what's considered beautiful?
That's a great question. I would say that yes, that's
mm-hmm.
certainly true. And I'm comfortable saying that I was kind of a Guida when I was in high school, and that is a beauty standard that you can equate it to.
Okay.
Lots of cleavage, really big long eyelashes, big hair. I mean,
okay.
you remember the days when I would bring my comb out in my purse because, God forbid, my massive
volume.
Call.
Yeah. But you, I mean, you have such gorgeous hair. How long
Thank
is
you.
Your hair?
It's really long.
It's
I
like,
would say, like, I have, like, if I cut it off now, it'd probably be 2.5 feet long.
Yes. It's like navel.
Yes.
Navel
yes.
height. And it's thick and it's like luxurious. And it's interesting because living with you, it's kind of like you always see like the other side of the coin. So you have like the most insane, amazing eyebrows, amazing eyelashes. Like it looks like you're wearing fake eyelashes
yes.
every single day with no mascara on. The longest, like most luscious hair ever. And I remember explaining to you that I shave like once a month because I'm like hairless, and you were like, oh, I'm so jealous. I have to shave
so
all
jealous.
The time.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's always pros and cons to like having all of those great things. And then I also
totally
remember
agree.
Seeing how long it took you to like do your hair.
Right.
So
every time people are like, oh my God, you have the most amazing hair. I want it. I'm like, let me just tell you what it really entails.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
entails 30 minutes of blow dry time just to get it dry.
Yeah.
Forget a blowout. I
yeah.
don't even know how to tackle that with
yeah.
this mane.
Yeah.
And then another 45 minutes to just get it to a flat place. And then
yeah.
you go outside for 20 minutes and it's all for naught.
Yeah.
Because it
yeah.
just starts poofing
yeah.
and it's humid, maybe.
Right,
and
right, right.
So while it's nice, it's very hot. It's challenging to wear down. Sometimes I'm envious of girls who can just wear their hair down because when I wear my hair down,
I'm really hot.
Sweating.
Yeah.
I'm sweating. It's like making my face oily, which then I'm worried about pimples. And I'm
oh,
like,
wow.
I can't do this. Like, it needs to be back.
Yeah.
Slash, I also don't want it in my food.
Yeah, true. So it's, but it seems like you kind of have the features needed to be like a babe in the Greek community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got
mm-hmm.
a nice full chest. Like, you've got big voluminous hair. But
yes.
like, what about a girl who's got like no curves at all and like kind of like thinning hair? Like, what does she do? She just like gets extensions and a push-up bra?
I'm trying to think about Greek girls who have that vibe going on. Like, we're very hairy.
Yeah, okay.
For better or for worse.
Okay.
And typically curvy, like even
yeah.
very petite girls have
curves. It's kind of like that Kardashian
Armenian, exactly.
like, yeah.
But I guess, you know, plastic surgery is big in Greece, just
is
as
it
is here. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Fake boobs.
Okay.
But implants, of course, getting more. Guys get away with everything.
Yeah,
I feel
true.
Like it's true most places.
I
in
know.
Greece, also, they have their, as you can imagine, their like manga outfit on, chest hair out, big
God.
Gold cross, shirt unbuttoned
oh,
most of the way, beer belly. And they could be the most eligible bachelor
yeah.
around just because of the family they come from or like whatever their status might be.
Yeah. Have you
ideally they don't have a unibrow.
Kind of gross. Have you been to Greece? I know you've been to Greece.
I
right?
have, yes.
And how do you, when you go to Greece, do you feel like you fit in? Do you, are you attracted to the men there?
Yeah, I am. And I do feel like I fit in. I would say it's always a compliment when I meet someone. They're like, oh, are you from Cyprus?
Oh.
Which is a better compliment than being like, oh, you're just, they just respond to me in English. I'm like, okay, I've been here long enough that
oh,
I can
okay.
get the language flowing. And at least
local.
They think I'm, you know, from a Greek territory or
yes.
place. But I definitely don't fit in fashion-wise. They have such funny t-shirts in Greece. Like, those
really?
Phrases where you're like
someone off-American phrases, yes.
Always in English.
Yeah.
And you're like, someone who wrote this did not speak English. Because
no, it's so
the
awkward.
Phrase is so funny.
I know. I always see this when I'm traveling. It'll just be, like, a hot pink t-shirt that says, like, a beautiful sunrise today. And I'm like, why are you wearing that?
Exactly.
But for them, it's like La Bella Vita. Right. You know, like, we wear dumb t-shirts with stuff in foreign languages.
I'd like to think I personally don't, but I think that I understand it as a cultural phenomenon.
Yes, yes. Yeah. You are also amazing at... So you're really good at doing your own hair, but you're also, like, your makeup game. You would do everyone's makeup.
Years of practice as a Guida.
You were, like, queen of the smoky eye.
I was all about the lashes. I mean, I was putting lashes on when I was 15.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And it's crazy because you have such full lashes already.
It was more of just the being able to bat your eyelashes and feel the weight of it there. It felt extra cute, but... That being said, I haven't put on a pair of lashes in a very long time.
Yeah. I mean, you have toned it down in, like, the 10 years. I mean, you looked beautiful with, like, the full face and the full thing anyway. Yeah.
I think I just had this idea pop into my mind one day. It's like, what's wrong with my face just the way it is?
Yeah.
You know, everyone else gets, or by everyone else, I mean, men have no problem walking out with their face just as they came.
Yeah.
Why should I have a problem with that? And I've made a point of not wearing makeup to work because in my job, my skin would break out if I would wear makeup for that long of a time in like stale air, touching my face sometimes if I'm you know, on the phone or whatever. And so...
And you work... Explain a little bit about where you work.
It's
like a corporate...
Yeah, I work in a data analytics company. We recently went public, so I think I'm thinking of us as more corporate-y now.
Mm-hmm.
My team is majority men, older than me.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, it's casual and it's also not a place where
you're not batting your eyelashes at anyone.
Right. Like, I don't care if you think I'm attractive. It's hilarious though. The days when I do wear makeup, I'll have a customer meeting or a reason where I want to just feel really put together. And so I'll put some makeup on and people are like, wow, you look so good today. I'm like, yes. The effects of makeup.
Yeah, that's
magic,
so funny.
Right?
Like, and the opposite of that is when you do wear makeup every day and then one day you don't, people are like, are you sick?
Right.
They're like, no, I'm just not wearing mascara.
Exactly.
I think there's something really smart about not wearing makeup to work because then you don't set a precedent. You know,
right.
It's like you don't like set this bar of like my face is going to look like this every day.
Exactly. And it's not like I'm going in unkempt. My hair is brushed. I'm dressed professionally, but I'm not going to clog my pores. I have problem skin. I always have. And I'm going to take this opportunity to bring in my toner. I have an Avion spray at my desk.
Oh my gosh, I have one too.
It's so sterile.
That's so funny.
Right?
I literally, like the little atomizer spray.
Of course. Hydration.
Yes.
Hydration station.
It's such a dumb thing to spend money on when you think about it, because I don't know how much those things are. I just buy it because I'm obsessed with it. But it's like, I'm paying for water in a can. But just to like mist your face midday with water is so... It's such a nice little luxury.
And tell me you bring it on the plane.
Oh.
That's the key travel buddy, right?
Unthinkable to even travel without it.
Exactly.
The little, like, heavy on misters. I buy them at Sephora. Amazon sells them, but they sell the, like, big ones. The travel ones I can only find at Sephora.
Yeah, the travel ones I found at Sephora, like Nordstrom Rack, maybe Nordstrom.
Mm.
The big ones, though, I order for my desk, like... The travel ones are only for travel.
So when you say you've had problem skin, because your skin looks really good to me now.
Thank you.
What have your problems with skin been? And have they, like, gotten better as you've gotten older?
I would say I'm still figuring it out. It is not resolved. I'm not... I don't look at my face and think I have clear skin.
Okay.
When I was younger, it was worse. Oily skin, again, I guess. Like,
oily
like,
skin?
Like that Greek, the Greek oil skin, blackheads, big pores...
Okay.
And sometimes just massive zits, particularly around my moon cycle. And so...
Sorry, back up. Around your moon cycle?
Yeah, when I have my period.
Oh, is that what... I've just never heard that terminology.
I think it's
like the more ladylike way to say your time of the month.
Hippie, crunchy way of saying it's my period.
Your moon cycle.
With the moon.
Really?
Typically, that happens. For me, I found that I cycle with the full moon.
What?
I don't know.
This is a first for me. I'm going to add this to my list of things I Google. You know?
Absolutely.
I was telling Amelia earlier tonight at dinner that I have a list of things. I write down things that I want to Google later in my spare time. So I'm going to add period moon cycles. Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
That is really fascinating. Okay, so when you're on your moon cycle, which is like...
Right. I just get these massive zits. But one thing I found that's very helpful is tea tree oil.
Yes.
Melaleuca.
Mm-hmm.
Just... spot treatment.
Do you
with
dilute
that.
It or you just do straight up tea
I'll
tree oil?
I'll do straight up essential oil for a spot treatment on a big zit. Otherwise, if I want to just feel like a cleansing mist, if I feel like I'm really congested skin-wise, I will water it down.
Okay, yeah, because tea tree oil can be really intense.
It's intense, but it's great if you want to dry out a zit.
True. And you put that on at night, and the next morning, it's like,
yeah,
done.
And it takes the swelling down, too, I've found.
Interesting. Okay. So, in like, your corporate work environment, where you're, like, surrounded by men, are there other women at the office that do dress up and, like, do the most, and does it make you feel any way about the way you present yourself, or are you just kind of like, I'm in my own lane, or are there just, like, no women in your workplace?
So, I think that everyone can get a strong picture in their mind when they think of a developer-type person in a workplace.
Right. Yes. Am I thinking,
very
like...
casual t-shirts that they probably got at some tech conference.
Yes, Silicon Valley.
Right. Okay. So, that's very much the vibe of how people dress on my team.
Oh, God. So, it's like Stanford in an office.
Right. So, feel no weirdness about wearing jeans, a comfy cotton blazer, t-shirt, and flats, and no makeup. But there are women that do look cute. They're just nowhere near my department.
But also, like, when you're obviously, like, super smart and, like, making a lot of money and, like, doing amazing work, it's almost like how I look is secondary. Are you watching Silicon Valley this season?
I haven't been great at keeping up with it, but somewhat.
Okay. Well, like, the main guy, I'm, like, forgetting his name right now, but he goes through this whole speech about how, like, this is for the nerds. Like, this is our thing. Like, you can't come in here and think that you can, like, charm your way and be good looking. Like, this is for us.
Right.
It's not about looks. It's about your brain. And I think that there must be something really refreshing about that.
I would say it's a double... There's pros and cons to it, right? Because I think if I were to dress the way that I feel like I dress when I'm my normal self out in society...
People would think you were ditzy.
People wouldn't listen to me. Exactly.
Wow.
Like, I'm teaching data scientists how to use our software, and I personally have insecurity that they wouldn't take me seriously if I dress that way.
Interesting.
And I think it harkens back to our days at Stanford when I'd be in the electrical engineering class and be like, honey, are you lost? I'm like, no, like, I'm here for class.
I'm dead. Wait, yeah, I can see that because you were like doing the most, but I'm saying that in the most loving way possible, but like full hair, full makeup, like your whole outfit. And and you looked very different from the average engineering student.
Certainly. And so you come in with a loud, boisterous, bubbly personality and some bright colored clothes. And I'm like, wait, what are you doing here?
I know.
Should you be here?
That's so funny.
And I have to tell you, it's hard to find a study partner.
I know. Oh my God.
It's just reality. So on the other hand, I feel like almost I dress down as a way of...
like neutralizing almost.
Exactly. Like,
that's
don't think of me as a cute girl. I can't be thought of in that way here if I want to be taken seriously and if I want people to listen to what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, I'm also teaching people that are twice, triple my age.
Yeah.
So I try to be as almost asexual, honestly, as possible.
Interesting. So it doesn't detract from what you're saying or what you have to teach them.
Right. So that they don't assume that because I'm a girl or like... a cute girl, a dressed up girl, a girl that cares about fashion, I don't know about data analytics and software.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think true equality will be when we get to a place where we can be both, right?
Absolutely. And when you look at someone, you don't make assumptions about where they should fit in based off of that.
Totally.
Snap
totally.
Judgment. Yeah.
So you're obviously a very beautiful woman. Growing up, did you understand that? Like, what were you taught about beauty growing up? I know that you were very close with your grandmother, who came from Greece. Like,
yeah,
she's from a whole different... How old is your grandmother?
She's 91.
Okay, she's 91.
Yeah.
So she was born in... I can't even, like, do that math.
1926.
Yeah. In Greece. I mean, think about how different your life is from hers.
Absolutely. So different.
She was born in the 20s in Greece. I mean, like, that's
her
insane.
Her life is totally different. Yeah.
What did she teach you about beauty growing up? And... did you understand from a young age that you were a beautiful young woman who was also smart, but did you also understand that you were beautiful?
Well, my grandma taught me a lot of things. I would say that she's one of the most low-maintenance beauty people
that
I know. Her main priorities in terms of beauty are protect yourself from the sun. She was always adamant from the moment I was
so
born
important.
To wear hats, wear sunscreen, and I have to tell you, she could pass as a 70-year-old in her 91-year-old
body. She looks great. I've seen lots
of
pictures.
Her wrinkles are very minimal. She's never done any work. She's never done any Botox. Nothing whatsoever. And her skin is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I wish I listened to her when I was a kid. And
oh,
I thought it was
so
cool
important.
To be sunbathing and, like, putting on oil.
No.
I now listen to her very actively and protect myself from the sun. One of her great tricks that I still take it up from time to time is to put Vaseline on her eyelids.
Wow.
It just gives this like really nice sheen.
Oh my gosh. Yes. There's a Pat McGrath highlighter stick that Lila and I are obsessed with. And one of the ends is like it's basically like Vaseline.
Yeah.
And it looks really cool on your eyelids.
That's her, like one of her beauty hacks. She's like, I don't wear eyeshadow. I just wear Vaseline.
Yes. I love that.
I wish I listened to her when she told me not to pluck my eyebrows when I was in the sixth or seventh grade. I look back at some of those pictures like, oh God.
They bounced back. They bounced
goodness,
back.
Thank goodness. I'm very grateful for that, but I wish I listened to that. And to your other question, did I think of myself as a pretty girl? No, I never did.
Really?
No, I mean, I guess that maybe it's like a beauty standard thing too. Like in my class in elementary school growing up, it was like very much a blonde girl thing.
Mm.
And so I feel like I kind of, I just didn't consider myself like desirable as a very small group of people looking And maybe it was a lack of self-love. I have to be very candid there and say that that could also be it. But I never thought of myself as like, oh, I'm the hot girl or whatever.
Yeah.
Just never thought that crossed my mind.
It's interesting because as young women, we aren't necessarily taught how to love ourselves. And it's almost like as you become older, you start learning about self-care and taking aside time for yourself and learning to change your relationship with yourself.
Totally.
But it's interesting that we're... It's not taught to us, right?
Right. No, totally. I think back to my grandmother, and she loves me very much and is such a wonderful woman, but she was my harshest critic at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, like, she would always be like, I can't lie to you, honey. I have to tell you the truth. Like, you look fat, or your hair looks horrible,
oh,
or
God.
My favorite is, you're not leaving the house like that, are you?
Oh, my God. Well, and you have to think, you have to put it into context, what she was saying to you, well, imagine what her mother said to her.
Right.
Do you know what
I
mean?
Of course, of course. And so it's very much a generally generational thing. I remember the first time I got my ears pierced. Actually, it was like the first time I got an ear piercing that wasn't ear lobe, but in my cartilage or whatnot. Just like, you look like a woman of the night. There's just a little bit of a disconnect on what's okay in popular society.
That's
or
so funny.
Society. Yeah.
That's so funny. So as you've gotten older, what kinds of things have you done to, like, I don't know, improve your self-esteem or your relationship with yourself?
Work in progress.
Yeah. And that's all of us,
very
right?
Very much a work in progress. Things that I do are self-love routines and self-care routines. I very much am a big believer in.
Yeah.
Setting time aside to just be with myself, maybe take a bath, do my face mask.
Yes.
Paint my toes.
Yes.
Maybe like thread my face.
Yeah.
You know, that is an act of self-love. It's like, I care enough about you today to take care of you. I think that I feel like yoga is a practice of self-love and helps me just get into my body and feel how good it feels to be here and how grateful I am for the life I've been granted.
Yes.
And when I put it in the context of gratitude and I see all the things I love around me and the people that I have in my life, I'm like, there must be something right about me. You know, I must be doing something right. If these people want to spend time with me who I admire and adore so much.
Yes. Yes. You have a lot of fans. You did something so amazing. I think it was over New Year's. You went to this like hardcore meditation retreat.
Yes.
Like, please, please tell me about it.
Okay. So it's a 10-day silent retreat.
10 days of silence.
10 days of silence. 10 hours a day of meditation.
You can't talk ever.
It's very challenging. I'm not going to pretend it's easy and that it was just this blissful, enchanting experience.
Okay.
The first 3 days are a struggle.
Okay. So, like, help me set the scene. Like, explain. So
I drove to Northern California about 2 hours north of San Francisco to the Redwoods, to this place called Kelseyville.
Kelseyville.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a Vipassana meditation center there.
Okay.
There's many throughout the United States. We're actually very blessed that there are so many available to us.
Okay.
And it's all donation based. So if you have the impetus to go and learn how to meditate in the Vipassana fashion, which was actually taught by Gautama the Buddha and preserved by monks in Tibet for the last 2,000 years. And it wasn't until, I believe, the 90s that this man, this Tibetan man, found the practice of Vipassana and it changed his life. He's a very prominent businessman, killing it from a financial standpoint, from a Western standpoint, but was getting these debilitating migraines and saw the best doctors around the world. He had the means and nothing healed him. And he comes to meet this monk and study Vipassana meditation. And it turns out that the migraines were psychosomatic. And so he made it his life mission to make these centers available for everyone at no cost. Anyway, so I show up and they're like these really lovely little cabins, super simple.
Yeah.
Basic cots, bathroom. You share it with a couple other people who you only exchange a couple words to on the first day. Otherwise, you're encouraged not to look anyone in the eye.
Oh my God.
It's really challenging not to talk when you can't, you know, if you look someone in the eye.
So I'm one of those people who will get a table for one at a rest, like at an outdoor cafe, and watch people walk by and make up their entire life story. The stories that I would make about people that I saw every day for 10 days in complete silence. I mean, what are these people like? Are they old? Are they young? Are
all of the above.
Interesting.
Yeah, all of the above. And I certainly do. Like, in my
Were there any like hot people, like really hot guys?
Well, men and women are also separate. So I'm not actually crossing paths with any men during the... Like, we meditate in the same hall, but you have separate entrances. You come from separate sides. You have separate sides of the dining area where they feed you.
Wow. Okay.
You never, like, interact, so it's not a thought on your mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess that's, like, assuming some... It's assuming everyone is heterosexual, but...
Yeah.
I could imagine that it would be distracting to have, like, really good-looking...
Yeah, I mean, you also have to think, if you're meditating 10 hours a day, you are wearing the most comfortable clothes possible.
Yes.
And they also recommend that you don't wear like full-on yoga pants. Like, it's distracting. You're encouraged to wear shirts that, like, go below your butt, like
loose.
You're not it's not, we're not trying to be sexy here. We're trying to be comfortable and meditate and go inside of ourselves and like have an active interior life, not an exterior life. And so that exterior kind of goes away when you do spend so much time in the interior, if that makes sense. Like, you spend so much time in yourself that that actually becomes the prevailing thought. While the first few days are challenging, you're like, oh shit, like, what did I get myself into? And even, like, later on in the cycle, there are times when I'm like, fuck, like, I need to get out of here. Pardon my language, but, like, I need to get out of here. Like, I can't do this. I'm like, then I look myself in the mirror, like, yes, you can. You can't be alone with yourself in silence for 10 days. If that's not possible, then you have real problems.
I have real problems.
That's just how I framed it with myself. I'm not going to say to anyone that they have problems if they can't do that. It's very challenging. It was a personal choice to go there and do that.
But are you allowed to have a phone?
No, of course not. You give your phone up. You aren't even allowed to have, like, a book to read or a journal to write in. Although I did sneak a journal in this time because...
You can't have a book or a journal?
No. Like, you are...
Oh, my God.
You are
Amelia,
with
my anxiety just, like, just hearing this.
I think most people would feel that way, right? But isn't it empowering? Wouldn't you imagine it's empowering?
I wouldn't get through
it,
so it wouldn't
be... anyone has to do. I didn't give myself the choice. I think that's what you have to go in with, that mentality of, like... 10 days, it's going to be over. Come, you know, whatever happened, like, I might lose my mind, but in 10 days, it's going to be over. There's a finite, definite end.
Wow. Can I ask, if it's not too personal to
ask,
what was the impetus? It's a very dramatic
thing to do. Yeah.
What happened that made you think this is something that I need for myself?
Well, this was actually the second time I've done it. I did it once before.
Twice.
Yeah, this was the second time I've done it. And the first time I went was, I think, right after we graduated or recently after we graduated. Okay. And you're in the turmoil of, like, who am I? What am I doing in this world? Where do I fit in? First job, anxiety, and
oh
my God, this can't be it. Like, this can't be life. What do I do? I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
And I went to this center and I had a profound experience that has changed me from that moment on. Now, second time around was not as groundbreaking. The impetus for going was that I was in a cycle of depression, quite honestly. I was feeling really low. I was not taking good care of myself. And I felt like it was getting a little out of control. And I thought back to the time I'd spent there before. And in the time that I've meditated, or especially for this intensity, it feels like you melt the stress and anxiety off of your body. And I can't explain it other than, like, it didn't feel like I was walking, but I was moving. Like, I felt so light in my heart and in myself that it was as if I was floating through life. And that's how good it felt. And wow. So I was just trying to get even like the smallest taste of that. I'm like, this is how I can turn things around. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling I had an abundance of energy and I could take over, do whatever I wanted. You know, yeah. I wasn't concerned. I let a lot of it go. And so kind of feeling like I'd had this negative cycle of thought, of action, and wanting something more and knowing that life is better than this, I went again. And it really opened my heart and my mind to see some really key, some things that I was missing.
It's so interesting that, because I would imagine that when you're going through like a very depressing time period, or when you're dealing with things that are really difficult, or you're neglecting yourself, the last thing you want to do is sit with yourself and your thoughts. I think that for me, at least, if I am feeling
Fair.
Any negative feelings, it's like escapism. I want to end the bad feelings as quickly as possible by distracting myself by doing something else, which is probably not the healthiest thing to do, but I think it's just natural.
Well, that being said, I'd spent the months prior in a like Bravo hole,
like a reality television,
DoorDash, just like getting food sent to the house, not cooking, watching Bravo all the time. Like all signs point to not healthy.
I know, but I'm so happy that you're talking about this because one, I think the stigma needs to go away, and because people don't openly speak about having these feelings.
Yeah.
When they do have them, they feel shame, and shame causes you to feel, I don't know, that you can't do anything to overcome it because you're too embarrassed to even admit that, you know?
Of course. I totally agree. I think in a lot of, outside of mental health, we're accustomed to acknowledging when things aren't quite right.
Yes, that is so true.
I mean, and we saw it at Stanford as well, so prevalent where people are suffering internally.
Yep.
And maybe even get to the point where they're hurting themselves or, you know, and you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Because there's not a dialogue about it. There's a lot of shame around it. And
why do you think that is? And like, this, I'm asking myself this question too. What can we do to change that, right? Because it's not going to change unless collectively we as a society want it to change. Do you think it's just a question of being more open about it?
I think certainly being open about it is helpful. I also think that, you know, in America, there's such a rhetoric of pull yourself up by your bootstraps and be your own person and save yourself. Well, if you're dealing with stuff internally, inside, sometimes you do need someone to guide you out of the darkness and confusion that is your mental health at that moment.
Yep.
And also, it's not your fault. You know, I think in so many times, even like addiction, we look at that person and be like, you're making an active choice to,
No, but it's a sickness.
Throw away your life. No, it's a disease. Exactly. And I think that as we start to migrate over to the understanding that mental health issues aren't something that we're choosing.
Right.
It's not something that signifies weakness of character or of
self. Exactly. I mean,
people would be more comfortable talking about it. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I was just thinking about this addiction campaign that I saw. It was comparing someone who was getting chemotherapy treatment with an addict, and basically imagine telling someone who is getting chemotherapy, like, you're so weak, like, you fucked your life up. Addiction is a disease, the same way cancer is a disease. No one chooses to be an addict. It's a sickness, and these are sick people that need help. But because we shame addiction so much, and we make people feel like there's something wrong with them for having an addiction, they don't get the help that they need.
Exactly right. And instead of blaming each other, all the people around us, in my heart of hearts, I truly believe that every day, all of us are trying to, we're being our best self that we can muster at that moment. Mm. We all want to live a good life. We all want to live a happy, full life of beauty and happiness and love and all of the things. And we're just doing the best we can at that moment. Maybe my trying as hard as I can doesn't look as good as someone else.
Yes.
But never forget that that person, that addict laying on the street, is trying the best they can. Do you think they would choose that for themselves if they had the choice? No.
True.
They're trying the best they can.
True.
So we can just give each other a little more compassion and love. I think that it would open up the dialogue a lot, because what are we afraid of at the end of the day? We're afraid of being judged.
Yes,
exactly. But if I open up about my stuff with someone, it's amazing how quickly that onion opens.
Yes.
And you get through the layers and you get to have a real, genuine, meaningful conversation with someone, which is so much more fulfilling for me anyways than talking about, oh, what this celebrity did this.
I know. Small talk is like the death of me.
You know, it's just not getting to that human core of connection that we're all seeking.
Yes. And so you leave the retreat, obviously. Mm-hmm. How has the practice of meditating for extremely long amounts of time and kind of tapping into yourself and your interior thoughts, how has that helped you deal with like issues of depression currently?
Well, I think that some of the states you're able to achieve in deep depression, having had that experience and being able to remember it and remember that that is possible is just so relieving. I would say that my practice isn't where I want it to be. Like, I'm not living, like, in my ideal world. I'm someone that wakes up at 5 a.m., I meditate, I work out, and I exercise. Like,
Everyone meant to be that? So, I think everyone secretly wants to be a morning person. Yes. I think that's like like a mark of success. Like everyone in their heart of hearts like wants to be the kind of person that wakes up at 6 a.m. and goes for a run. I am not that person. I've kind of reached a point where I no longer even want to be that person because I feel like it is not in the cards for me. It is not who I'm meant to be.
Well, I read this book called The Morning Miracle.
My husband has also read this book. And like he like wakes up at 6 a.m. starts playing classical music and journaling and meditating. And I'm like,
but low-key, those days are the best fucking days.
Yes, okay.
Like, so, you feel like you can take over the world. So while I'm holding myself to an unattainable standard if I think I'm going to be that person every day, if I can be that person 3 to 4 days a week, my life has changed, and I'm still working on building that habit. As you know, I'm kind of a gypsy at the moment, moving from place to place, but overall, I would say that the biggest impact meditation has had on me is, one, like, how I have relationships with my family. It helped me, like, work through some stuff with them and also find patience. Like, for example, when you're dealing with 91-year-old people, they speak really slow and they add a lot of detail. So for someone like me who's like, get to the point, like, let's go, I'm moving, let's grow, I could finish your sentence. You have to just sit there with yourself and wait, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Or if you're ever, like, in line for something and you're getting really annoyed, you're like, God, it's brunch time, like, I want it now, I can't wait the 45 minutes. Yeah. Sometimes you just go to that quiet place in yourself and you find your enjoyment, you know, it's enriching time. And so instead of feeling bored or annoyed, if I'm in traffic or if I'm waiting in line or I'm waiting for a table, I go into that place it makes me feel very happy and content in that moment.
It reminds me of, I'm going to like totally butcher his name,
Thich Nhat Hanh, yes.
I'm obsessed with him.
Me too.
And he has this great portion in his book, I think it's Peace in Every Step, about how he was like, difficult person at the checkout, perfect, great, an opportunity to practice love in your Buddhist philosophy. You know, rain and horrible traffic on your way to somewhere important, great, wonderful, an opportunity to practice patience. It's like, you kind of take the challenges in life as opportunities to practice love and patience and mindfulness. Yeah,
absolutely.
I can see that.
Absolutely. Instead of falling victim to my thoughts and where they might take me, we talked about self-love before, we talked about impatience or whatever it might be, my thoughts, if they're driving that train, I can go way off the rails and not be in a good place. But if I stop myself and say, wait a minute, like, that's my monkey mind, that's my reptilian brain going off because that's how I've been taught to survive, and it thinks this negative thought's really important, I need to hold on to it and just ruminate on it. Instead, I can stop myself and be like, wait a minute, that is my monkey mind. That's not myself, Amelia. That's not my true self thinking those things. That's just this weird, that's my programming.
Yes, that's how you, it's so interesting that you bring up this thing about how you talk to yourself, because I think a lot of people have really negative self-talk. And I feel fortunate. I think my parents like went a little bit overboard. Like, every single day they would be like, what are you? And I would like repeat back, special. Like, what are you, Brickey? I'm special. Like, I watch videos of it and I'm like, you're creating a monster. I'm like 5 years old. I'm like, I'm special. Like, they taught me to always be like very like positive in the way that I think about myself.
That's really beautiful.
But sometimes I catch myself like really negative self-talk, like, oh my God, like, how could you fuck this up? Like, what? And I'm like, whoa, like, well, you wouldn't want anyone else to talk to you like this. Why are you talking to yourself this way? Like, this is not the way to talk to yourself.
Exactly.
But you have to be aware that that's even happening to know to stop it.
Right. Else you'll just keep going down the rabbit hole.
I know.
And saying, this is why you're bad. This is why you're wrong. This is why you don't deserve what you want. Like,
right. And you create that story for yourself.
Exactly.
And then you stick to it.
Of course. The more detailed the narrative becomes, the harder it is to shed that narrative.
Right.
I think.
So growing up, you were saying that you didn't feel like as beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
How have you like changed your internal narrative to get to a place where you can look in the mirror and be like, I'm bomb.
Mm-hmm.
I know I look good.
That's a great question. I don't know if it's like one of those things that comes with time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I found enough people that found like my particular flavor of beauty attractive and like reinforced that. I know it's really lame to say it's coming from these outside sources, but I'm still working on the strength of self to not care about it. I've just like found people are like, wow, your body type is, the body type that I like, or you are, as opposed to.
I'm actually so happy that you said that, because I think when you're younger, you think everyone has to be this like perfect cheerleader body type.
Right.
And actually,
there's one mold. There's one mold for what you think is pretty.
Exactly. And then you get older and you realize that, like, let's say you're like 6'2" as a woman and you're super self-conscious about that.
Yeah.
There is a guy that is like just looking for a girl over 6'2".
Exactly.
Because that's like
the hottest
thing
in the world
to him, So it's like everything that you may be like self-conscious about, and you feel like, oh, people won't like me because of this. Like, that is exactly what will be perfect for someone. Yeah,
exactly. Like, there's so many different tastes and styles out there in the world that I think you just have to accept that people resonate with you and you will resonate with them.
Yes. And
if people haven't reiterated that for you, you just haven't found the right people yet.
Totally. And you have a very handsome boyfriend.
If I do say so myself.
Yes.
He's
Billy.
Thank you.
What do you know? Have you ever asked him like what it was about you that attracted, like what was he attracted to immediately?
Well, if I'm honest,
it's just like he was just like that ass.
That. It's all about the ass. It's really all about the ass.
Oh my gosh, men are so particular.
I'd like to say it's, my striking personality, but I know it's all the ass.
Yeah, so he was like that body was just like what I wanted.
Yeah.
And then I like found out that you were like an incredibly smart, intelligent woman. Second.
You know, we were actually friends for like 3 months before we started getting physical.
Okay.
I think it was always like sexual without being, reaching that. But we worked at the same company at the time.
So there was all that like sexual office tension in the air.
We'd be like on Skype for business all day, just
oh my god,
sending each other videos. I think it was the moment when I was like, yes, you have to listen to this Chief Keef song at 6 a.m. He agreed with me. I was like,
it's love.
Yeah.
So how has being in a relationship changed, like, do you do anything different with your makeup or the way you dress because you're now in a relationship, or you just like keep it the same?
That's a great question.
Does he give you like points of view about?
No, he's very like, he just wants to wear his workout clothes all day. He's super comfortable. He doesn't care. Sometimes I'm like, I want an opinion.
Yeah.
And then he'll tell me his opinion. I'm like, actually,
I
know what you thought about that thing I bought you the other week, so I don't accept your opinion.
Yeah.
You're not right. No, he's cute. He just like gives me a lot of encouragement and
That's
tells
nice.
Me I'm beautiful. I feel like if anything, maybe sometimes it makes me want to get dressed up more. Like when we have our date nights, I'm like, I want to look really cute.
Yeah.
And if it were just me, I would still be doing the same office routine, and then I probably wouldn't be, I mean, I'm sure I would be getting dressed up to like go meet people or whatever, but it's nice to have someone to get dressed up for and like wear, all of the maybe like lingerie that they're going to see later.
I
and
know.
It's like an exciting process from purchase to
the moment revealing it. It's
so
funny though about lingerie, because it really is more about women, because I think guys don't really care about the lingerie you're wearing, but because you feel so sexy, I think I've at least observed that men get turned on when you are turned on and like when you feel sexy.
True.
So it's like because the lingerie makes you feel a way, then they're like, they can sense that.
True. I also think it's the whole like you're putting on for me. Like we've been in a relationship now for just about 4 years.
Right.
And it's exciting when you're like, oh, yes, there's still effort being put in here. Like, I still care. I still want you to think I'm sexy. Like, I don't want it to be casual and, like, I'm wearing my, like, t-shirt. And, like, that's fine sometimes. Yeah. But, like, we don't need to lose the luster the sparkle and excitement just because we've been together for a while.
Totally. I had maybe, like, a year into being married, I went through a rampage of throwing out, like, every, like, ugly t-shirt, like, anything that had, like, the smallest hole in it. Like, why? Like, underwear that has a hole in it, just, like, throw it away.
Needs to go.
Just needs to go. It's, like, not cute. It's not, and I would be like, oh, it's, like, my period underwear. No.
No.
Never okay.
No.
Never acceptable.
Yeah.
You have to, I think, you have to remember to keep it cute. Even if you've been with someone for a long time, even if you've been married for 30 years, you really have to make sure that, you know.
Totally.
You look good at all times.
I agree. I have a question, though. What are your thoughts on, like, matching your underwear, like, bra to undies? Is that something you do often?
I am very strange in that everything I have is black.
No, that's perfect. I feel like that's the strategy.
All of my bras
forget
are black.
Matching, just buy all the same color.
All
but
of
what
my
do you do when you wear, like, a nude top? You have a couple nude things or, like...
No, I would just wear a black bra.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All black, everything. I agree with that strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just...
Then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
There's something, like, so sexy with a matching combo.
Yes. So I have a few...
It's, like, one step before lingerie.
Yes. Like, Hanky Panky, I think it's called. I have, like, some of their lace bra and underwear. Mm-hmm. That's what I bought at the sample sale that I'll wear sometimes.
Nice. They actually have a product that I'm recently obsessed with, and I'm, like, a... curvy woman. So, like, for those of you out there, they have these amazing high-waisted underwear.
Oh, love a good
that are so attractive. It's a high-waisted thong.
Whoa.
So it's, like, one really cute, like, I had a dress that came too low and I used it as, like, a lace background, but I also just enjoy it for the shape that it, the silhouette that it creates for me.
Yes.
You know, like, hips there, but then waist little. It's a nice combo.
I love it. Yeah.
So, highly recommend it. I'm grateful for the high-waisted underwear movement.
Yes, and I have so many bikinis now that are really high-waisted.
Exactly. Like, where has this been? Like, God, remember when
the
low-rise.
The low-rise.
The worst trend.
Everyone had plumber's butt every single day. Like, I don't know why we thought that was cute.
Especially for, you can appreciate this, for, like, girls with an ass. Like,
exactly.
You have to buy jeans two sizes bigger just to fit it over the ass, and then they're not going to stay up on their own.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's miserable.
The struggle is too real.
So real.
So what other beauty products or beauty trends are you really loving right now?
Okay, well, there's this product that I'm obsessed with. I think they're like Wilma Schumann, they're collagen hydrating eye masks.
Okay, you showed me this in the bathroom. It looks like a science project.
Okay, it's like this amazing jelly thing that you put under your eyes and it has a serum on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I love the most is if I've been drinking the night before, the next day, if you've seen me hungover, you know I'm a nightmare.
I've never seen you hungover. So interesting.
Well, because in college, I didn't get hungover. But
I was actually being sarcastic. I've seen you in
but
all states,
I've tried to optimize it, but really, Liger and I just don't get along. So
honestly, it doesn't, I think...
It's poison, right?
Exactly. Like, all signs point to it. Like, people throw up.
Exactly.
You feel dizzy, you have a headache. It's not good for you. Okay, so
but
next
I still
morning...
haven't figured out how to avoid alcohol in my life. I still can have a great time drinking. But anyways, I feel miserable and swollen.
Yeah.
And, like, absolutely don't want to go out into the world the next day. But oftentimes, I don't want to lose a whole day to, like, cave hungover status, and it's not very fun. So I'll put these eye pads under my eye, and I immediately feel better. They're, like, tingly and refreshing. It also helps with the swelling that happens under my eyes after I'm hungover.
Okay. It sounds like what I do frozen green tea bags over my eyes if they're swollen. It
That's
feels
probably
amazing.
A better solution and more economical. I just feel like when I'm feeling so low and
you
shitty,
just want this,
like,
luxurious,
I just
want to
treat myself.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like,
and where
I'm
do you buy
to,
these?
I buy them from Birchbox.
Okay. I'll put the link
like
in
the
there.
Birchbox points. I'm sure you can find them on Amazon or like a Sephora. It's not a Korean beauty brand. It's like a... I imagine it's an American brand or something like that.
And you love,
that.
You're like really into like Korean beauty
I'm stuff. Really into Korean beauty stuff. I
yeah.
just feel like I trust the people who are doing the research and they've invested a lot more in their technology and their understanding. And they do take a almost a more natural approach. Like I feel like a lot of the primary ingredients, well, not all of the products are by any means like natural by our standards. The active ingredient is... something like a natural enzyme.
Does it bother you that you cannot read the labels?
1,000%.
I'm just like,
I hate it.
I'm looking at this packaging. It's all in Korean.
I'm
just
going to
take people's word for it that this is like okay when I'm putting on my skin, but I don't really know what is in this. I don't know what the regulations are. I don't know if I'm even buying this from a place that's legit. I don't know.
What you need to check out is this online store called Peach and Lily. I would
Peach
say it's the Birchbox of Korean beauty. You can get your sample box, your monthly sample box if you want. And it's great. They have fantastic reviews because, of course, they're sending out the sample boxes so you can read what other people think about them.
Nice.
And I appreciate that.
Do you remember buying beauty products before reviews?
Yeah, it was
like
it was a crapshoot.
Exactly. I mean, I think now I don't buy anything without reading several reviews.
Of course.
Anything, doing all this research. And yeah, I mean, that just wasn't around 10 years ago. Like we have so much access to information, which is great because it really holds the beauty companies accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know Kim Kardashian just made like an insane amount of money with her makeup line that she just released.
Her contouring pack.
Oh my god. Which
I still haven't learned to contour, but
it's
whatever.
Fine. You don't have to ever learn. It's ridiculous because most people aren't on television. So I don't know why everyone needs to like have their face beat like a drag queen, but that's a whole other story. I wonder, and I don't know what the reviews are like, but someone with her profile and status cannot release a product like that and not expect to get, like, tons of reviews, right? So people are going to know within the first, people are probably, and I'm not in her target demo of someone who would want to buy her stuff, but people know by now, the product's been out for a few days, if it's even worth the money or not, because everyone has done their review.
But don't you also think she has, like, the Kim K version of a beehive? Like, there are going to be people who are going to write reviews just because of who she is and write good reviews because they love her and want to be her and not because of any efficacy of the product.
Totally, but I think that there are, like, these trusted beauty bloggers and YouTubers that people, they have gotten to where they have gotten to by being, like, no-nonsense and not sugarcoating things. And that's what gives them credibility. So, like, they're not going to.
Is there someone that you prefer to go to their reviews and their assessment of a product?
I really love Pixie Wu. She's like this UK-based makeup blogger. She's been around for like forever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have like a go-to. I think it's funny. The YouTube tutorials, I can follow along every single step like in slow motion, and it will just not look the same.
No,
like,
it's just, never looks.
I'm like
the
I'm
same.
Using the same brushes, the same products. I'm following all the same steps. Like my smoky eye just doesn't look like yours.
No.
I don't know at what point things are going wrong. So I kind of have like a love hate. I honestly, I just like watch it like TV. Like I don't even try to follow along anymore. I'm just like, oh, this is interesting. Like maybe one day I'll do something like this, but probably not.
You take like one little trick here and there, but you cannot take the full process.
It's
a lot.
And actually a makeup artist explained it to me. They said it's not even the brushes or the products, it's like the weight that you're applying with your hand. It's the brush stroke,
right?
It's like there is an art to doing great makeup.
Of course. Like if Picasso had a YouTube channel and was going paint stroke by paint stroke, showing me I have all the colors, I have all the paintbrushes, I could not do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's the same thing for sure.
Exactly. And I also think some people can do makeup on themselves really well because they know
they know their face
they
better
know their
than
face
anyone. Yeah, of course.
So well. And sometimes just like looking in the, sometimes it's just not the same. So
I totally agree. It's challenging. I've kind of given up on learning new
things.
I'm just gonna go basic.
You're like a makeup expert. I'd say you're like
really. I really feel like I did all my learning in high school when I was like strong in the Greek community, and there was like such a like anything that you went to, you had to have eyelashes on for, which is just unrealistic and just ridiculous.
So funny.
And to think about the fact that I was like 15 or 16 at the time too, it was just too much.
I know. My friends and I always joke, like, when we look at pictures of us at like, 16, we were, like, Rachel and I will always say, like, baby hookers. Like, we look
exactly.
like baby hookers.
It's
like, what were we were doing
mortifying.
The most?
Mortifying. And, of course, I wouldn't listen to anyone be like, oh, you shouldn't be wearing that. Or, like, is that a little too much? My grandma mostly saying those things, of course. But it's funny looking at teenagers now and thinking, gosh, like, I thought I knew no one could tell me anything.
I thought
I had it down.
I know. But it's also, like, a rite of passage.
It is. Of course.
And,
of course.
It's actually,
hilarious.
It kind of, like, warms my heart. Like, I see girls freezing on the streets with their coats
exactly.
and their miniskirts, and I'm, like, adorable. Like,
cute.
I am literally wrapped up in an oversized cashmere sweater, driving to go home and watch Netflix as I like pass you in your mini skirts.
Waiting in the club line.
Have fun. I did it. I served my time.
Exactly.
I have now retired.
You're married. I'm done. Thank you.
Are there any like beauty trends or products that you've tried and like were horrible, or just beauty trends that you've been seeing that you just really don't like?
Okay, so along the Korean beauty line, one thing I do like, you said, is it don't like first?
Well, okay, no, if there are other things you do like, tell me more things you do like.
I would say, like, I don't like some of the products within this line, but I like the process. It's called a sleep mask. It's a particular product that's only sold, I think, by Korean beauty brands, and it's basically extra layer of hydration. So you have your toner, then you have your serum, then you have your sleep mask, and then maybe you put a heavy-duty moisturizer on top of that, or maybe you just do the sleep mask.
This feels like marketing spin.
Well, you know, whenever you can create a new need.
Exactly. It's like, okay, serum was like this thing a few years ago, and it was like, everyone needs to buy a serum, and now they're creating a step after serum that's a sleep mask before your moisturizer.
Exactly.
Like, come the fuck on.
Right, but I low-key really like it.
You're like, but I'm a victim of it. Okay.
But so I have this, like, snail goo thing makes my skin glow.
Okay. So you do a toner and then a serum, and then you do
And I do not do a moisturizer on top of it because I personally feel, like, a sense of claustrophobia or, like, suffocation when I have so many layers on my skin.
Yeah, like,
you know, I need to breathe.
How many layers can you put on your skin before you go to bed?
Right.
Okay, so the snail goo, you're into it.
I'm really into it.
Okay.
My skin glows.
Is it called?
I honestly couldn't tell you. That's the thing about the cream.
Yeah, because, like, you don't know what it is.
It's really hard for me to recommend them because I forget the name. All I know is it has snail in it, and I like it.
I'll
take a picture of it.
Okay, I'll put it in the show notes also.
But there are wins and losses. Like, that can be really slimy, and no one wants to feel that way. So I guess it just
is. It actually from snails?
Yes, 1,000%. It's like snail, not excrement. That's not the right word.
Oh my god!
But I imagine it's just like what snails sweat, and it's just gooey. But it's just full. My skin glows.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, your skin looks beautiful, but.
This is
just reminding me why I love having this podcast. Just not even this podcast. I love talking to women about beauty because it could be the woman. Any woman on the street, you could ask her what she does for her skin, and, like, someone's like, I'm putting snail slime on my face at night. Like, every single woman, I just encourage women to talk to other women, even a complete stranger, about what do you do to your face in the morning, what do you do to your skin before you go to sleep, and you will have, like, the most in-depth conversation, and we're all walking around here. Every woman you see is walking around doing these, like, we all do these crazy things, and it's just so interesting,
true.
You know?
And I feel like, in a way, maybe sometimes women aren't as encouraged to share it unless you're with your intimate girlfriends because it's we're instilled with a sense of competition with one another.
Like,
no, let's all win together. Like, what's your secret? What's my secret?
I'm
so grateful for all the people out there who are sharing the tricks of the trade.
Because I don't
have the time to do the personal research.
Oh my God, yeah. And also, what's better than a word of mouth recommendation?
Exactly.
I don't need some beauty editor.
No, Amazon review will get me the way my friend telling me this product works phenomenally for them.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so the snail goo. I need to try it.
Yeah, sleep masks.
Okay.
But I've just gotten rid of my moisturizer, to be honest. Like, in the morning, I'll do my toner, serum, sunblock.
And then, of course.
And then in the evening, I'll do my toner, serum, sleep mask. And so I've gotten rid of the moisturizer because I always felt...
So your sleep mask is just your moisturizer.
Basically, is how I'm
with
using
the new
it.
Name.
It's not how they market it, of course.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You need something else.
So, okay, what products or trends do you not like?
What don't I like? I'm trying to think about it, to be honest. I feel like I see so many people with fake lashes now. I'm lucky that that's not something I'm stressed about, but I, like, worry for their eyes and
I stopped.
Right. It burns your eyes, right? Like, I see people who are like, my eye's burning. What could it be? I'm like, well, maybe it's your lash. Like, I'm sorry to point it out, but
it's like glue and foreign object in your eyes.
Like,
I didn't even have one time I had, like, a bad reaction when I was getting it done, but I think that it makes your own eyelashes fall out. And then even just beyond that, psychologically, like, in my interview with Lucy, we called it the eyelash addiction spiral.
I laughed so hard in that episode.
But it's true.
Yeah.
You get used to seeing your eyes this way, and it's amazing. Like,
I can imagine.
It looks bomb. You're just like, my eyes are so cute. Like, yeah. It looks amazing because you wake up and you have this full set of gorgeous lashes, but then it comes out eventually, and then you just have to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going.
It's a never-ending thing.
And then you don't feel beautiful without them.
I guess my whole goal in my beauty regimen is to not make it so cumbersome. Like, the more things that are added to it and the more expense that's added to it, the more frustrated I feel.
Totally.
And the more that little rebellious voice confects, like, why am I not good enough as I am? And makes me want to just cut everything out completely, which is not the solution for me, at least. Like, to anyone who wants to do that, by all means, more power to you. But, like, I just want to look good and feel good without it being a $1,000 a month, 20-hour a week habit.
Yes, yes. So, my brother said something to me once that really stuck with me and kind of disturbed me, but he was like, you all of this crap to your skin. What if you just stopped? Like, what would happen? He's like, if you just washed your face with a bar of soap.
Exactly.
What would happen? Maybe it is just because I would like to think this because it supports all the crazy time that I spend investing in skincare. But I would like to think that all of the stuff I'm doing does make a difference, because I would compare it to, like, working out and eating right. If I just stopped working out and stopped eating right, yes, there would be a difference in my body. So if I stopped treating my skin well, I would assume there would be a difference, but I've never tried. I mean, maybe.
I mean, you have beautiful, glowing skin. I can tell you, if I go one night without washing my makeup off and putting on my toner, I will 99% of the time have a new zit the next day.
I mean, I wouldn't know because I can't go to sleep without my... I literally can't fall asleep.
Feeling.
I cannot fall asleep with makeup on.
Right.
I've just been, like, conditioned out of it.
No, I can't. Like, I feel disgusting the next day.
Yeah, it is not a good feeling.
I haven't brushed my teeth and washed my face. Even if I don't put on my serum, but, like, in the ideal world, I do that.
Yeah.
I don't feel good the next day. Like, I find those are the days where I'm snoozing, and rolling over because I don't want to be up in the world because I feel disgusting.
Yes, one of my favorite quotes from Diana Vreeland is, the way that you feel going to sleep is the way you feel waking up.
So true.
So, like, I love a night when, like, I get into bed and I'm not depleted, exhausted, but I feel like I'm ready for bed, but I also feel like I've cleaned my face.
Right.
I'm, like, wearing nice pajamas.
Right. The wind down ritual.
Yes. And then I wake up feeling amazing.
Right. I totally agree. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that you don't like?
Honestly, like, I'm just over, maybe it's like I lived in Orange County for too long, but I'm just over feeling like if I'm not getting like microdermabrasion or like laser therapy to my skin at 28 or like Botox, then somehow I'm not keeping up with my, you know, keeping up appearances or something. I'm just overhearing that and having that conversation.
I actually had I love my dermatologist. I asked her, because I do all of this stuff at home. I make my own face masks.
No,
I'm very,
you're so prolific.
I'm very, you know, kitchen beautician. And I said, you know, do I need to be getting facials? Because if you go to get a facial, they'll be like, when was your last facial? And you'll be like, 6 months ago. And they're like, not good, right? But it supports their industry, right? They want you to come back and get facials all the time. And she said, honestly, whatever you're doing at home is working. Your skin looks great. You don't need to go to a professional place.
She's one you should stick with.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And I only go to my dermatologist, like, once a year, maybe once every 2 years. If something's wrong, obviously I go. But I don't think you need to... you just take care of your skin. I don't think you need to, like, spend a bunch of money having people, like, rub stuff on your face and put lasers on your face. It's just, like, too much.
I totally agree. I just feel like that's not the popular opinion, right? Like, that the beauty regimen has extended to, I mean, even surgery.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
like
just
a luxury.
Commonplace.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, I feel like I'm winning if I'm, well, one, I know that if I'm eating right, my skin will look significantly different.
Totally.
And so instead of trying to see what external thing will fix it, trying to just do right by myself first, and then trying to keep it as simple as possible. And so I guess anytime people are trying to convince me I need this extra, I'm resistant to that.
Totally. That's like, I really like that it's like something, a trend that you're over, because I agree, people, there is such thing as doing too much.
Like, there's always this new treatment, this new laser, this new
like these vampire
diamond brush thing that you need to get. Like,
Exactly. Vampire facials.
Yes.
And honestly, I can admit that I was intrigued. I was like, whoa, I can get, and a vampire facial is basically where you like get your skin broken with needles essentially, right? So you're, and because your body is saying, okay, emergency, emergency, repair, 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 right. The skin's like like upper layer is being pierced. It produces extra collagen, and but
right.
It's just like it's a little crazy. Like if we're being honest,
pretty extreme.
It's a pretty yeah. extreme thing to like make our faces bleed to like look more youthful for a week. At the end of the episode, when do you feel most beautiful?
I would say I feel most beautiful probably like I've just come back from yoga or a workout. I come home and I take a really long shower, like wash my hair, like shave my legs. That's a big part of feeling good, is like having the hair maintenance taken care of. Mm. And come out, like put in my hair milk, which I love.
Yes.
And just take care of myself and sit down. And I just feel so fresh and yes. so new that yes. I'm feeling really good in my skin.
I love that. So basically, like, feeling clean.
Clean is a huge, huge part of it. Like, yeah. I've just showered. I have, like, the smoothest legs. I've put in all my, like, coconut oil. And I started to use olive oil on my skin, which has had phenomenal results. Nice. And, you know, take good care of my hair. Like, wrap it up in a comfortable way where the weight of it isn't pulling
yes.
at the hairs in my scalp. And maybe do a face mask.
Yes.
And
yes.
I just feel like my skin is super hydrated
yes.
and soft.
Yes. Oh, feeling clean and moisturized.
It's the best.
It's that simple. Like, we don't need high heels and contour. Like, just feeling clean and moisturized
exactly.
can just make you feel so beautiful. It's
absolutely.
So true. It takes a while, though, to get there, you know? Like, you have to, I think it takes a certain, like, maturity to allow that alone to make you feel beautiful. But once
true.
You get there, it's just such a, it's like,
It's the best. Like, it could just be me and my dog and be like, I feel so good in my skin right now.
Yes.
Like, I feel so happy to be alive.
Yes. And it makes me like that much happier that we're just like sitting here on the floor, clean and moisturized ourselves.
Exactly.
In our pajamas.
I have like my slippers on to protect my like moisturized feet
yes.
that I go at with extra vitamin E oil so that the bottoms of my feet are nice.
The best feeling ever. Well, thank
so
you
good.
So much for
my
doing
pleasure.
The show.
Thank you.
This was so much fun.
It was
and
awesome.
I think that all of the stuff that you shared is going to be really inspirational for people, and I hope people that listen to this, like, I'm personally feeling like I could maybe try to meditate. I'm not going to do 10 hours for 10 days.
I believe you can.
That's very intense. I can barely sit still for a minute, but I'm going to pledge today that I'm going to try to start meditating and see if it makes a difference.
For anyone out there who does want to try, I highly recommend the Headspace app.
Yes.
It actually takes a kind of Vipassana mindset towards meditation-ish. I mean, for those intense Vipassana meditators out there, I know it's not the same, but it's very similar, and it takes a really incremental approach, and I feel like it's attainable and accessible to people who've never meditated before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm going to get clean and moisturized, and then I'm going to try to meditate.
Exactly.
With
that's the perfect state to be in.
Okay. Amazing. All right.
Yes.
Thanks, Amelia.
Thank you, Brooke.